Supertalk 1270.
Get ready for Unriveted Radio on Supertalk 1270. Now, here's Travis Feist and Rob McLeod.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Unriveted, a Dakota Customs original podcast. I'm your host, Travis Feist, and with me, and always, is my co-host, Rob McLeod.
What's up, guys?
Hey, before you answer that, Kelvin, I just want to jump in and say thanks, buddy, for joining us for this episode here for the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
That's the problem. Like, even with the Chevelle that I have, I'm trying to find tires for that thing. And without doing full drag race tires, like, it just seems like I'm having such a hard time finding something I can put on that can hook up. And
what size rim do you have?
Well, they're 33, 22, 50, 15s. And
this is Pro Street.
Yeah, and I've got the Mickeys on there, and I know they're old. I should put new ones on, but it's just I can't get that thing to hook up. It'll pull you back in the seat just as hard as that thing is spinning. And God, if I could get that rest of that power to the ground. But I know Hoosier was making a radio, and I've been watching for like over a year, and they've been on back order and back order and back order. And it's just like, for that size, you're so limited without going with a full drag race tire, which I don't want to.
I hate to break it to you, my friend. 15-inch deep drag tires, that entire segment is still stuck in the 90s. There is no... I don't know if we're ever going to see a 33, 1250, 2250, 1850, 15. I don't think we're ever going to see that in a drag radio or something that's DOT rated that's actually going to hook. I know your struggle. We've got a good friend of ours with a CUDA, and it's got like 31, 1850, 15, something in that neighborhood. And same thing. He couldn't find anything. And his is not as much a drag car. It won't go to the track, but he wants it to hook on the street. And unfortunately, he ended up going with some Hoosier QuickTime Pro, radials, and they don't hook. They will not hook. And he's in the same boat, I think, unfortunately. You can't get what you want in that car. I think you've got to either commit to the radial street tire, or you're going to commit to going to a wrinkle wall and you can't drive it in the rain.
No. Well, even on the street, they don't last. And for expensive as they are, you'll wear out that tire in no time. And what's scary, too, with running with that Mickey Thompson, it's almost got like that directional in the tire.
Yep.
And you start getting that thing over 100 mile an hour, and it's like a directional tire, and they'll start wanting to find the depressed wheel tracks. So it gets squirrely over 100 mile an hour, especially on the street. So that's another reason why I don't like that tire. But, yeah, I think those Quick Pros is what I was actually looking at from Hoosier. So it's a good thing that I didn't pick them up. But it's hard trying to find something that, if I could just get that power to the ground, would be so much more fun.
And I think this is a testament, too, as we talk about the technology of the drag racing and traction and tires, and I think the reason that these companies aren't going back and applying this drag radio or this type of technology to those sizes of tires are because the guys that want the drag radios, they're getting it done with a 10.5 wide tire. They're taking Fox Body Mustangs and they're running eights, and they're running a $400 drag radial Nitto. You know what I mean? And so I think a lot of those tire manufacturers, they're looking at it like, well, why would we invest the time and energy to completely revamp what they consider now as more of an obsolete technology in drag racing? There's not going to be a need for the big wide stuff when guys are putting down the times they are with the narrower tires. And the other thing to factor in too, Travis, what do you got for, you got like Caltrax, or what do you got for traction suspension control on that thing?
Well, I just have the 7-way adjustable QAs in the rear. It's back half, four link. It's got Strange rear end, 456, full spool. And, I've never taken it down the track, but it's, an in-town hot rod, just take out, beat on, and then put it away for a few months kind of a car.
Yep.
It's got a 540 big block, reverse valve body, 400, auto, manual shift. So it's almost like it's almost too much even just to drive on the street because it's just, it's not practical. And I think I get like 4 miles a gallon with that thing. It's just a hog.
That's miles per gallon.
But it is, but it's got so much torque that it's just like in town from light to light is like, I don't care about nothing else, but you get in that thing and you open the dumps and you hammer on that thing. And it's just like I said, if you could get that power to transfer, it would pull the front tires off the ground, I guarantee. It just, the torque is unreal.
It's kind of funny when people ask me about that car, they're just like, the standard question is like, well, how much horsepower is it making? And like, as soon as I hear that question, it's like, okay, you don't really know. You're just kind of just, and I say, I say 700 horse, and they're just like, and they hear 700 horse, and they think it should be making 1,100, but like the 700 horse is kind of irrelevant because the thing is just a torque monster. So like when they hear 700 horse, they kind of just like almost like bat their eyes, like, oh, it's not even making that much power. It's like, no, it's making power, just not horsepower. And it's actually, it's really respectable, the drivetrain in that car. So.
You know, and that's the thing too. It's, you tell people it's, you know, it's all carbureted. It's naturally aspirated. It's, there's no turbo, no supercharger, no nitrous.
Right.
It's all motor, and you know, and that's where you get that thrill.
It's just a cool car.
Dude, it's cold blooded.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something about the vintage cars and the feel and just the kind of the aura that surrounds them, especially when they've got a nasty cold-blooded engine. It's hard to keep running when it's cold, and you're stoplight to stoplight, you're sweating because you don't have AC, and 93 degrees out, but it doesn't matter when that light turns green and you lay the wood, man. It's I get it, and I think it's what draws a lot of us to that old stuff, because anybody can build a really, really fast car for a lot less money. If you pay attention to your weight, you can get a late model car or a light Fox body or a old import car and slap an LS in it, you can build a faster, lighter car for a lot less money than dragging an old muscle car home. But there's just an added factor to it that is hard to explain. But
right,
I think the coolest thing with that car is the pedal feel. It's just like, it's raw. It's kind of stiff to press, and like that translates into your body. It's like every time you just like you step on the throttle, it's not an electronic throttle. Every time you step on the throttle, you get more thump out of that motor, and it translates to you. The car is raw, and I haven't even driven it down the street. I just basically pulled it in and out of the bays in the shops, and I think I did just do a loop. Like, we got like four entrances or three entrances in our parking lot, and I just went from one entrance to the next one. I just goosed it just a hair, and I was like, oh yeah, like. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like something like that. You don't build a car like that to go 200 mile an hour. I mean, that's not the purpose, but you build that hot rod
for the
look, the feeling, and everything else. And that's what I wanted. You know, I wanted something from light to light that it had just so much power, so much torque. And that's what that thing does. It's, you know, you don't just nail the throttle. You just lay into it, and that thing just gets mean, and it'll lift the front, and the tires it goes nuts. And
yeah, it's got an attitude.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You become, with mine being a stick car, so I have a personal theory that every muscle car needs to have three pedals hanging down. But of course, that's not what gets you fastest, right? And my big thing is, when I'm shifting gears I feel like I'm an extension of the car. I'm part of the car, right? And so I can visualize as I'm driving. I don't even need to look at my tach. I know when to shift. I can tell by how the steering wheel feels. I can tell by listening to the engine. And I just now in the last 5-6 years I've been picking up on speed shifting, and it has cost me one transmission, but dude, never lifting and shifting is a lot of fun. And until it's not, but I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I tell you what, it just makes you feel like you're part of this oiled machine, and it's that raw, cold-blooded nature that you're talking about, and it's all of a sudden you're part of that.
And it's funny you say that, because like you get in this thing, it's you know, there's no heater, there's no radio, it's just two seats. Well, obviously, there's no back seat, so it's just two seats. It's loud. It creaks because of the roll cage. It's noisy. You know, it's not anything comfort. You're just going to take a road trip with. I mean, it's nice, but again, it's old school, raw horsepower, muscle car.
Yep.
And it just, even with all that, you still sit in it and, yeah, it puts a smile on your face.
Like the seat profile, the gauge layout, you just feel like you're in a race car. I mean, like, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
I remember one time I had my mom with me. And I think I just finished, it had a 454 in it, and I took it out and put this 540 in it. And so I think I picked her up and we were cruising around. I don't know if we were out to eat or ice cream or something, but I was giving her a ride in it. And we were like on this main section, it's what we call expressway. And we were sitting at the light, and this Subaru rolls up next, and, you know, to me, and he's eyeballing me, and, you know, he's spooling up and revving up the motor. And my mom, you know, she starts laughing and she's giving me crap. Like, I think he wants to race you. And I was like, okay. Well, she was just kidding, you know. So I reach over and I open up my dumps and it's 3-inch pure exhaust right to the ground underneath your feet. And it's a game changer. I mean, the floor's shaking and it's dominantly a lot louder. And this guy in the Subaru, he slowly looks over at me when I open up the dumps and his eyes got real big. And I think he realized, like, oh,
I think ain't nothing to mess with.
He bit off a little bit more than he can chew.
Yeah, and so the light took off, and of course, I was raised. I'm like, no, I'm doing this. So the light takes off, and I pull on him right away, and I'm just hammering on it, going, and my mom's over there, and she's screaming her lungs out, and she's beating on me and yelling at me and slow this thing down, and I'm like, don't worry, Mom, you're buckled in. Don't worry about it. Like, I got this.
Yeah.
And we're pulling away from the Subaru, and we get up, and then, like I said, once you get over about that 100 mile an hour, the rear end starts getting squirrely on you because those big tires are trying to find the depressed in the highway. So, yeah, needless to say, when it was a little over 100 mile an hour, and that rear end started swashing back and forth and getting loose on me, and I puckered up a little bit. It's a sketchy feeling. And Mom's over there screaming at me, yelling at me, and don't you ever do that again. And I was just like, yeah, well, like, this was, but then after she calmed down, she was like, that was the coolest thing ever.
Yep. No, that's awesome, man. It's what we live for, man. It's little moments like that. You know, you spend hundreds and hundreds of hours dialing a car in just for that, you know, that 17 seconds of escaping reality and just in becoming part of that car as you stretch its legs. There's nothing better. Well, maybe snowmobiling, but that's about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Rob's he's a delegated snowmobiler. I used to be, but I gave it up.
I'm going to get you back into it.
Yeah.
You didn't give it up. You're just taking a break and you don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm not going to say, I'm going to say I'm getting too old, but I don't know. I just don't.
I don't heal like I used to. The way you spend your free time is shifted.
Yeah, I just figured if I'm going to take time off in the winter, I'm going to not go and spend more time in the winter. I'm going to go ride Harley in the warmth. I feel like my priority is
eating.
That does sound relaxing.
Yeah.
And when I am digging my sled out and I'm in the middle of Wyoming and I'm stuck because I thought I could Chris Brandt my way up
the
big hillside. Then there is a point when I take my helmet off and I'm sweating and the sled's 8 feet buried and it's going to take me an hour and I have to get it out. There is one little point where I go, why did I come here?
Right.
You know, but aside from that, man, there's nothing like hitting the deep pot or steep and deep.
Yeah. And what's nice, and I know Rob can vouch on this too, it's, you know, back in the day, this was like when I started, the King Cats were just starting to come on. That was like, you got to have that sled. Like, that's the ultimate sled. That's the hill climbing sled. You got to buy the King Cat. So then next thing you know, the Pro R's started coming out. So it's like, that's the sled you got to have, you know, and that's the ultimate sled. And then when the new chassis, the Skidoo came out, you know, it was like, okay, those are pretty cool. You know, those, everybody loved them. But then you started picking your favorite. Well, I still was dedicated to Articat, and so when I quit, like, this was probably back in 15, I think was about my last trip. Well, even in 15, when we had the new HCR and new Articats, I had a buddy out there that was riding a King Cat, and it's like, okay, let me ride that King Cat one more time, you know, because that was like the sled. I mean, that was like the sled you had to have. And
15 minutes, I'm good.
Yeah, it wasn't even that. I think I tried taking it for one loop, and I realized just what a heavy pig. And it's just like with technology and everything, it's just like that's half the battle to be a good snowmobiler. You got to keep up with the newest and greatest sled to make your riding ability.
Snowmobiles hit what I like to compare as like the iPhone curve. So look at what cell phones were in 1994, and then look at what cell phones were in 2004, and look at what cell phones are in 2014, right?
Right.
And the snowmobile technology, for whatever reason, followed that very similar exponential growth. I mean, we went from edge chassis. I mean, a mountain sled in 2003 was a 144 with a 2-inch paddle. That was a mountain sled. That was a pretty hardcore mountain sled.
Yeah. That was like a, like the powder special, like the first fuel injection, and you know the big wide skis. Like then you know you're somebody if you had that setup.
That's right. That's right. So and then flash forward 10 years later, and then 10 years later, and you know now if you're not so my wife and I we both ride 155, 2.6 paddle. They're based off of an RMK, but it's an SKS. They're Axis Polaris chassis. And the only difference between the RMK and the SKS is that the SKS gives you a forward bulkhead cooler, which helps us out when we go ride in the UP, Michigan, in case you run into some areas where the snow is getting a little thin. But aside from that, it's essentially an RMK. And there are guys now when we go out west where they'll scoff at a 155 and go, I won't even take you where I'm going if you don't have a 165 or a 174.
Yeah.
I mean, you're riding an 11-foot Werner extension ladder up a hill. You know what I mean? And
it's not that
the
fun.
The abilities of them are amazing.
Yeah. It's like a 174 or the Skidoo 175, and then like the back in the day, a King Cat with like a Cutler 1000. That was a straight point and shoot sled. You pick your chute and you're going straight up it. Now it's like, so I've been on. My last five sleds were either a 163, and then I switched to Skidoo 165, and then my 24, I got a factory turbo coming in. It's going to be my first sled with a 154. But what drew me to it was they dropped down to a 15-wide track, and I pick up that track speed, then plus with the turbo, and kind of my style of riding has changed. I don't really want to be the quickest, highest guy to set that high mark. I want to go have fun in the trees. I want to put that sled on the tail, turn it around, and just be nimble in the trees. So that 154, with this turbo, it's going to be a riot. So
kind of a sweet spot. I agree with you. I ride very similarly, and don't get me wrong. If you give me a mouthwatering chute that hasn't been touched yet,
I'm not going to look past it.
Yeah, 100%. But I agree. My bread and butter as well is steep and deep, tight trees, very technical. I like the riding where it puts more on the rider, right? Mm-hmm. The big chute, now granted, obviously that takes riding skill and keeping away from rocks and making sure that your body English is correct and navigating it somewhere you want. But at the end of the day, you can pretty much equivalate how far you're going to get up that nasty Widowmaker chute to how big is your motor and how much track do you have?
Right. And whereas, how big a ball do you got?
The trees, I mean, it's how well can Rob wrong foot forward, side hill, and plant into this hill while he's carving up, while he has to hit that particular 56-inch window between those two trees. Mm-hmm. And Rob knows if he misses that, it's going to hurt him or cost a lot of money. And I don't know why that is so, like, adrenaline. It's the only way I like to ride. I like that high risk.
Right. It's super rewarding. Like you pick a line and you hit your line, you hit every single mark on your line and you get to where you want to go. It's just super rewarding. And I'm really excited about this new sled because my last three sleds were all Gen 4 Skidoos and they had T-motion. Well, I'd lock it out because I'd either, with that T-motion, you'd either lay your sled all the way over and wash out or you're not on edge. So this one, even when you locked it out, you'd still get a little of that T-motion give. You just didn't quite have the ability to hold an edge and get to exactly where you want to go. And when you're dealing with inches to get between these trees, you got to put your sled right on that edge that's going to put you at the angle to get between these trees. And so this new Freeride, they actually went to a full lockout rigid rear skid, and then they offset the spindles. I think it's like 2 inches back on the skis, and I'm not it's supposed to help. Just it's going to be not as forgiving,
sure,
but you're going to get a lot more precise rider input, you know, to allow you to make those maneuvers just dialed.
So if I didn't ride a Polaris, I would probably ride a Summit or a Freeride or, you know, a Skidoo of some form. And I will say this, when I tried out that T-Motion, I think the concept behind it was ingenious. I really do. I think that their intent behind it was to give you as much track roll and flex as possible and allow you to cut into that hill. But I think where it went wrong on the real-world application, and you're kind of getting onto this, is when I hopped on a T-Motion sled, I can't tell when I'm cutting and when I'm – I can't tell when I'm on edge or when I'm not on edge.
Until you're washed out pointing up the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. On my Polaris, I feel like I'm riding a Lego. I can literally plant, cut, and I can, like – I can picture the right corner of my track digging into that hill.
Mm-hmm.
With that T-Motion, I was all over the place because I couldn't tell where my edge started and me just laying it over stopped.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like you're like riding a bronc or something like that. It's just you don't have any consistency on how the sled's going to react to the snow underneath it. So last year I went to the Bighorns. I was still on a Gen 4 because my turbo from the year before that never came in. So I was like, well, I need a sled. And that's when we're dealing with all the COVID stuff in Canada. And I didn't have a dash, which I needed an altimeter for the factory turbo, and that's how those things run. And so I picked up another Gen 4 Skidoo, and that's why I wasn't too ambitious about riding, because it's like, well, I've been riding the same sled for 5 years now. We were out in the Bighorns, and we missed the good snow, so the snow was kind of set up in some spots. It kind of wasn't, and we didn't even ride overly hard, but just to do the snow conditions and how much of a handful riding that Skidoo with the T-Motion, it just took a beating on me, just between the snow inconsistency and the way that sled was just throwing me around. And I think at the time I was probably like 225 pounds, and I'm 6'2", so I usually have the lead hand on a sled, you know, the sled usually doesn't outride me. And it was a lot, so... I'm really pumped on this new sled. So
and a hardcore Skidoo. Let's defend the Skidoo guys for a second. A hardcore, very talented Skidoo rider would tell both of us with our T-Motion feedback to just quit being a baby and learn how to ride it.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It's gonna say, some seat time.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I've never actually been a fan of the T-Motion, because even when I hopped onto that sled with T-Motion, I was on M8s, I was on Pros, so I knew how to ride. I didn't need that learning curve built into the sled for me. I already could throw a sled over and knew what I was doing. So I always just locked it out as soon as I got the sled. That was just like putting a can and lock the T-Motion out.
Yep. No, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
Travis, you've got a big, big, big time background in bikes, yes?
Yes. Yep.
So instead of riding out in the mountains, you'd rather be on a Harley in the 86 degree weather. Birds chirping and the sun out. That's your vibe.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, I've been building bikes for years. I've you know, I'm kind of one of those that, I wouldn't say like I'm a huge like adrenaline junkie, like I need to go skydiving and bungee jumping and stuff, but it's, there's something about riding a machine. And you know, I've been doing bikes since I think I got in doing motorcycles and snowmobiles about the same time. And so at the time I'm like, this is awesome. I can play in the summer and I can play in the winter, and it's a win-win. But then I started realizing that, you know, the winter sports are a little more expensive. You have to update frequently. You got to plan. And then after a while, it's like, all right, you know, snowmobiling, it's, you wreck stuff. You gotta, it costs money.
Takes a day or two to recover.
Yeah.
Snowstorms.
Well, yeah, then I realized like you gotta work out. You gotta be kind of in shape, because that really makes a difference. And so, you know, as we progressed in the snowmobiling, you know, like our machines gotten bigger, our machines gotten faster. You know, it's like we used to jump cornices and do all that. Well, I ended up breaking my nose. And so that kind of was like my first eye opener, like, okay, well, that really hurt and that really sucked. But, you know, just you rub a little snow on it and you get back on and you keep riding. But I realized that throughout the years of upgrading snowmobiles and upgrading your gear and upgrading your helmet and upgrading your goggles, you know, and then it doesn't stop there. Then it's like, well, you get bigger trailers, you get newer trucks, and the sport's expensive and it's still fun. But I feel like that, you know, you can build a bike and in 5 years you can go 5 mile an hour or you can go 80 mile an hour. It still looks cool. You can still have just as much fun. And I was enjoying that. The second thing is like, man, as I get, I'm going to say wiser, not older, but wiser, that it's like I'm finding myself that my hobbies that I enjoy are nice weather stuff. You know, it's like I like to fish.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
yeah,
Robin, I would argue that you're probably smarter and more responsible and you're going to save yourself a lot more money and headaches.
And it kind of got to the point of like, I drew more towards the motorcycles because I've got a few of them. But you know what's crazy is, you know, listening to you guys talk, it's like, yeah, that used to be how I was with the snowmobiling. You know, it was just like,
sure,
point and shoot. You know, you tell yourself, like, I need to go up that chute. I bet you I can't. I want to see how high I get. But it went from that to now it's just like, the last few years of snowmobiling, it was more the technical riding. Like, I got a rush, like you guys were saying. You know, you go into the trees and you find all this fresh powder. It's spots that nobody's ever been into. So it's like, I want to go up there. But I think when you're traveling at, you know, 30, 40 mile an hour, it seems like, or, you know, that you got to pick second of decisions. Am I going to go left? What's up left? Am I going to make it? Am I going to get in a bind? Or should I hurry up and go right? Like, you have to make split, fast, second decisions going through the trees.
That's what gets me going.
Yeah.
And
so
Tom knows this. You'll
yeah.
The technical line.
Yeah.
Like, you'll have your choice A line, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going up, you make a cut, maybe you make a slight mistake, or maybe there's a rock under that you bounced off of. And, like, on the fly, like you're saying, on the fly, second decision making,
now
have to adjust, and I now see line B, which did not exist before.
Yeah,
and
it's
your heart going.
Yeah, it does. Crazy. And then what got me, it's just like when you're doing that, all of a sudden you'll come upon to where you got through the trees, and then you'll come upon like a big hidden area back that nobody's ever been in.
Greatest.
It's all fresh powder, and it's not
big old honey holes.
Yeah, man. And it's like these bowls that you find that it's not hills, but it's just that fresh powder, and you'll play and play and play in there. And to me, it was like I got more of an enjoyment out of that. Then it seemed like once we were doing that, then it was like we were taking snowmobile trips, not with like your ordinary guys that could like these were like top-notch guys that could ride, but we were picking people that was like, you're fun guys just to go travel with. Like, we were, towards the end there, we were picking guys that sucked at snowmobiling. I'm telling you, like, these guys, like, you must Velcro them to the seat because they don't even know how to get off the seat. Like, they sucked. But these were type of guys that, like, you're fun guys to go out of town with. You bring fun. It's just great guys. Well, that's what we started doing, is picking guys that probably didn't know how to ride the best, but the company was the, you know, it's just the stories and the trip was more like we were looking forward to the trip more than the snowmobiling.
Yep.
Well, I think after a while, then it was like, this is an expensive sport just to go hang out with some buddies with that, you know. So it just, I just transitioned, and now it's. I have a couple Harleys that I have at my buddy's house down in Arizona, and it's just like I'd rather fly down there for a few days, ride the, you know, big wheel Harley, and it just and come back here and get away from the cold than to leave the cold to get up there. And I think Rob's got a couple years left in him, but I think if we had this conversation in 5 years, I'll bet you he'd be
he might be there. I might be there someday. I'll give you that. My dog's 58, and he's kind of approaching the you know, his body, and he gets colder faster, and And this is not a rip on him, but he's realizing he can't do what he could when he was 24.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, too, just because of where we live, if we had, like, good, let's just say 3 months or 4 months of just good winter and then it was over and we were out of it, but I think it seems like our winters are so long up here that I don't want to spend as much time in winter if I possibly have to, because it just seems like it's already drags on for as much as it can. But I mean, it would be fun. I'm not against it. It's just, I think my priorities have changed. But it's I love listening to Rob. Like, he's got stories, and I know he talks about, like, all his new stuff and going out. So I kind of live my snowmobiling stuff through him.
Sure.
And I had a Harley before I went back to school, and I had to sell it once I got halfway through engineering school just because I was broke. I needed to sell something. Definitely wasn't selling the sled or my pickup, because mm-hmm. those two kind of go hand in hand. So I started working for Travis again, I started working for Travis, and that bug or that bike bug just kind of rebit me. And I told myself when I sold my Street Glide, I was like, when I turn 30, I'm gonna buy myself another bike. So it actually, a few months before my 31st birthday, I went and picked up a Road Glide, and man, it's full circle. I'm even more into it. And even like when we were talking about like picking lines in the trees, well, when I'm on my Harley now, like even just ripping the streets, like I see a manhole cover and I dodge it, or I see sure. the turning lane lines and I carve my bike into it and carve out of it.
Sure.
And like I've kind of even showing Travis kind of a new shift in like these performance baggers, and he's into it, like mm-hmm. wheeling these things and just doing rolling burnouts and spinning them around. And like I respect big wheel baggers and what it takes to make them look cool and how cool they look. But to have these big heavy bikes and you put big suspension on them and chain drive them and redo all the clutching to where they'll run with sport bikes for sure. They just got the torque to run with sport bikes. They're probably anywhere from 50 to 70 horse shy on the horsepower range. But sure. You know as well as I that horsepower is how fast you get to the wall, and torque is how fast you get through there. Torque is how far you get through the wall.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So you're basically building the equivalent, because I'm not huge into bikes. So you're basically building the equivalent of like you're taking like a 72 Caprice, and you're stuffing 800 horse in it, and you're hanging with late model light fast cars,
yeah.
basically.
Essentially, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's just, I think it's
there's
the same.
There's something American about that,
right? And you know, and I've built quite a few customs of seen
various soft like, tail choppers.
It's never been like two exactly the same. It's they're
sure.
You know, I think the one I built for my brother, it's a hardtail and it's over 10.5 feet long. I mean, it's just,
oh my god,
yeah, it's I think just the front forks on it are almost, I think it's like 4.5 feet. I've built the most craziest hardtails, softtails now, you know, doing baggers. I've built baggers, softtails. I'm a big fan of the Cholo softtail. I've done all that. I love it. I love it. I love it. I still get, like, I'll take it out and puts a smile on my face. And like I said, you can cruise Maine or you can take it on the highway. You get the same feeling. Like, just the cruising, it's just, like, everybody needs that wind therapy kind of a deal. But it seems like lately, probably like the last 3-4 months, it's like Rob got me onto this, like the Sea Bear stunts, and you know, these guys that are taking these dinos and these baggers, and they're beefing them up, and they're doing these performance stuff and the wheelies and the burnouts and that stupid wild stuff that everybody loves. And it's like, I'm getting into that. And you know, Rob and I have made comments like we should get together and buy this old raggedy, you know, like we were talking like when's like the first year the bagger came out. Like we should find that bike, put this big motor in it and just like build just like that. Like you want to take some aggression out, like you get on that bike and you're out doing Brodies and popping the front tire and just trashing on this thing. But it takes the bagger level or the bagger lifestyle to a whole different level. And it's like, I'm kind of leering towards that now a little bit, just that little bit more of like an adrenaline.
So
it was like 6 minutes ago, verbatim, Travis was like, well, as I get wiser, you know, I don't need to be jumping cornices. I don't need to be flying off, you know, big thrust, you know.
In fluffy snow. Yeah, in
but
fluffy
I will
snow.
Go pull wheelies on baggers and knock my head on the pavement.
It makes total sense, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're getting wiser, Travis.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I'll just stick with my priorities are changing. I'll just stay with that one.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that sounds mature.
Yeah, there you go.
It's really cool, the camaraderie that Ride and Bikes brings. Just like Travis was saying, that he kind of was bringing fun people to be around with on these snowmobile trips. Well, it's like, it totally translates to riding bikes. Like, there's nothing beats a good day of just going from small town to small town with an awesome group of guys, getting a good meal, maybe towards the end of the ride, having a drink or two, and or whatever you want to enjoy. It's so much fun. It's like such a great way to spend time, especially on a nice day on some nice roads. It's like, I'm hard pressed to say that's just as fun as snowmobiling on a Bluebird deep powder day too. I love it both. So pretty.
Thank God we live in a place where we get to choose these outlets.
Yeah.
Very very little limitation, right? Mm-hmm. You go to Italy. Guess how many baggers and drag cars they have in Italy?
Oh man.
Not very many.
Right? No.
So it's for us to be able to be here and have the freedoms to do it, and then also tie that into, if you want something, go get it, work hard for it, be passionate. Right. Mm-hmm. For you guys to actually have a business, and your guys is, I mean, all of our three live, our survival is based off of guys that get something out of these hobbies, and it's something more than the material value. It's something deeper than that, and I think you guys just touched on it. I think it can be achieved out in the snow. It can be achieved on a bike. It can be achieved in a $800 Jeep Cherokee bouncing off the trees in the woods, and it can be achieved with a $100,000 Pro Street Chevelle.
Right, and you know, and it's funny that you say that, because it's kind of like, so every year we did this a couple times before pre-COVID, and then now that COVID's over and everything, that so we, a buddy of mine, he's got a house down in Arizona. We ride our bikes down there for the winter, and then we ride them back in the spring. Well, every trip that we go down, we take a different path, and everything that we do is two-lane roads. We stay off the interstates. We try to find mountainous roads, just something that you can let us switch backs and stuff like that. But it's funny that when you talk to like snowmobiling, you know, you pick your point, you pick it, you shoot it, you know, that kind of, you know, mentality. Well, with us, with our bikes, it seems like that when we start getting to a lot of switchbacks, well, we'll chase each other. So you're pushing those baggers, like you're picking your lane, you know, like this last trip we were coming into, I think it was like Rexburg, Utah, and we were coming from the top of the mountain. We were coming down into Rexburg there, and it was a two-lane, it wasn't like an interstate, but it was through the mountains, two-lane coming into town.
Just west of Yellowstone?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we were coming in, and it was like 15, 20 miles of just like almost like an interstate. I mean, it was fast traffic, but it was coming into town there. And I was chasing my buddy. Just bought a brand spanking new CVO. And I was thinking, you know, like, I'm not letting this guy show me up. So I'm staying on his tail. And it just, you kept that thing in fifth gear. And you just pick your lane when it comes in the curve. And you just roll that throttle. And you lean that bagger over. And you're just, you know, you're hauling the mail. And then once you straighten out, you let off and to the next corner. And then you pick your lane and you hammer on that throttle and you just lay that bagger down. Well, we were chasing each other like that for like 15 miles coming into Rexburg. And just that adrenaline and laying those big baggers over. And we're full gear. We got, you know, tour packs full of, you know, clothing and everything. And we're just laying these baggers down and pushing them to the limit and just almost that red line, just listen to those pipes beller. Well, we're coming.
Yeah, we gotta stop talking, or you're gonna make me buy a motorcycle.
Dude,
I'm not a motorcycle guy, but that sounds pretty.
Go buy yourself a bagger. You will not regret it.
And you're weaving through traffic respectfully. I gotta put that in there. Respectfully, we get up in the town there, and this newer Corvette, black Corvette, pulls up beside me, and he rolls his window down, and he's like, I was chasing you guys for like the last 12 miles. And he's like, I've never seen Bagers do that before. And he goes, all I have to say was that was awesome. And he gave me the thumbs up. And it's kind of cool. You got, you're cruising. You got a Corvette following you, kind of doing the same thing. But it is. It's so much fun that I just feel like I've just switched, I guess, my passion to more of the motorcycle end of it. But I don't know. Everybody has their, I guess, their choice.
I guess so.
I think it's fair, too, that we all kind of go through, you know, in longer-term windows, I think we all kind of go through phases, too.
Right.
I mean, not that we necessarily get bored with one hobby, but we just might be attracted to another thing for an amount of time, and then that might kind of die down a little bit, so you jump back over here, and
right.
I think that's pretty common, too. It's something about, I think guys that are into as many hobbies as we are, we're maybe have a little bit of some form of ADD. We can't sit still. We got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to stay moving on something.
Yeah. It's, if you ever get that chance to ride Harley, it's, you know, and it's one thing too, that you can grab like some of your best friends or your best friend or put your wife, girlfriend, whatever in the back. And just to what you see in the countryside, you know, doing all these two-lane roads.
Yep.
But when you start getting through, like, there's this place, I think it's the Million Dollar Highway. It's over by Durango, Colorado, and it's like 86 miles long or something like that. And it's rated the top five most dangerous and deaths on this road. So you're climbing.
A great place to go ride a bike.
Oh, it's amazing. Definitely. So it's a bunch. You're on the side of a mountain. You go up the mountain and come back down. And it's like 15 to 25 mile an hour curves you go through this, but there's no guardrail. There's not even a shoulder. It's when you're going around these corners, you look off to the side and it's just mountain of infinity. So if you go off, it's not like you're going to go down a ditch. Like you go off, it's you're going to disappear into like the atmosphere because it's spooky. It's crazy. But we were doing that too. We were kind of like chasing each other through, you know, like that highway on there. And it is. There's something about that, just to do it with a buddy and that adrenaline. It's just, it's a blast.
It's cool. And I got to say, like, even maybe just kind of ending note, that we are all truly blessed that we get to enjoy these things. Our lives are so good. Yeah, obviously we have times where we can complain or we get a little stressed out, but like to do the things that we get to do, day in and day out, and that we're passionate about. It's like there's people out there that hate their jobs and they never feel fulfilled. And it's like we are so like it's awesome the lives that we live.
Further, Rob, go halfway around the world right now and see what people have to deal with.
And yeah,
how they're trying to get through day to day. Let alone not liking your job. I mean, there's people. Mm-hmm. People that are waking up today that may not go to bed tonight, and that's
right.
And that's, I think, right. It's important for any of us that are into these hobbies to keep that in perspective, right? They offer us a release, a getaway, a zen, you could call it. And you got to remember, at the end of the day, man, this is all something that we've been blessed with. And
oh, truly.
Mm-hmm. To you know, and that's where getting more people involved in it and trying to, you know, having people find more joy through these hobbies or through these things, which isn't, you're not doing it to get a guy into a Jeep. You're doing it because he might enjoy himself.
Mm-hmm.
And like Travis is saying, you got a guy now that you can sit around a campfire and truly decompress, relax, and really build relationships and memories and mm-hmm. good times. And 100%. It's cool to talk about cars and trucks and bikes, and I don't think that stuff's ever going to leave our veins, but keeping it in perspective, I think as I get wiser, I think that I'm starting to see that a little bit more. There's a grander picture here, and thankfully we have the ability of doing this, and it's not even by works of us.
It's awesome. Like I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, just kind of to become better at this podcast, so we can keep doing it. And I heard a great quote. I used to complain about not having any socks. I used to complain about not having any shoes until I met a man with no feet. And that just completely hit home with me. It's like,
that's right.
Fine. We're fine. Like, mm-hmm. We're fine. Everything's good. So
makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
Yeah.
And you know, and the big thing is like us and like even you, Kelvin, it's like we go to work every day, we work hard, but we also play hard just as much. And I feel like as we do get wiser, and it just seems like lately, and I don't know if it's because we know more people or how it is, but it just seems like as crazy as this world is and everything that's been going on, it's like you got to live for today, you know, within your means. Is if you can do something fun and enjoy it and get out, it's like don't put it off till tomorrow because there's no guarantee. Like have fun now, you know,
seize the
just
moment.
Enjoy it. And it seems like the more and more and more as I get wiser, I look forward more of everything that I do. It's like, what kind of memories are going to make? Like, I do it for the memories. So, like, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, you can sit around with that guy and be like, hey, do you remember when we were chasing each other down the mountain there on our baggers? Like, it's about making that memory. I think that
you gotta
means...
You got to have something to talk to with your friend in the nursing home when you're 86.
Yep. Telling stories.
That's how I'm going to stay young. I'm going to say, hey, you remember that one time I jumped that railroad grade in the UP on my sled and I landed in trees and fractured my hand in three places and needed surgery? Wasn't that fun? And that's what it's all about, man.
Yep.
Like you said, get out there. Get out there and do it. Go do it today. Mm-hmm. You're not guaranteed anything.
No. I used to be like that. It seemed like that you'd save up, and I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with that. It's just if it's within reason and you can afford to do it. Like, have fun, because like I said, there's no guarantee to tomorrow, and it's like, why would you want to wait when you're in good shape and can enjoy it, make the memory now instead of later? So it seemed like I kind of set back a little bit, and it's like, you know, if I can do something and make it cool, I'm going to do it. You know, it's just like Rob came up to me and we have an opportunity to tag team and kind of like cannonball run a couple of, is it C8 Corvettes?
Brand new C8 Corvettes.
Yeah. Down to Arizona. And it's like, well, duh, of course I'm going to say yes. You know how much fun this is going to be? Because you know there's going to be some wild crap going on. And we're going to make some stories out of this deal. So that's half the reason. I didn't do it because I want to drive. I didn't do it because it's like, geez, there's nothing better I'd like to do than sit behind a wheel.
You're not a long-haul driver.
Yeah, I'm not a semi-driver. But when you say your buddy asked you to cannonball a couple Corvettes down to Arizona, what part of that doesn't be like, I want to be involved in that deal? So make memories, you know, and do what you can.
Yeah.
So, you know what, Kelvin, it was an honor to visit with you. I would definitely like to get together with you and come down and check out your spot, hang out with you, check out your stuff. Let's do that. We should set something up. It just sucks that you're a 49er fan, but maybe if we come down for a Vikings game, maybe we can
team's good enough to host the game in January and we get an opportunity to rematch and face you guys, let's do it. I don't even really want to talk about Monday night still, so it's a little special for me.
Paid we'll
a lot
talk
of money
about the next game
to watch my team struggle against Captain Kirk. So
yeah, so they're coming back to Minnesota.
No, that would only be if the Vikings procure a playoff spot and a high enough seating so the Niners have to travel to you. Which after Monday night, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I just, team is rolling and we've obviously got some things to fix now.
Yeah. And again, it's the Vikings. So it's, if you bet against them, you're wrong. If you bet for them, you're wrong. So
That's right. Hey, you know what? It was a blast. Getting back to what we were talking about, it was a blast. We were there with my mom and dad and some friends. It was a fantastic time. We made memories. I'll never forget that stupid end of the first half play. Juggling for the ball and Addison goes into the end zone.
He came out of nowhere.
But guess what? I'll never forget that play. I'll never forget the look on my dad's face. It was like Minneapolis Miracle version 2, you know? And so it was a great game and I'm always gonna stand behind my red and gold. I've been a Niners fan since when I could basically walk. So
that's cool.
It was an entertaining game nonetheless, and obviously the US Bank Stadium, awesome atmosphere.
It was
beautiful.
Awesome.
And you know what, man? The Vikings, they just straight up played like they needed that win more than we did, and mm-hmm. they deserved it.
Yep. So, it was still a good game. It kept you on your feet. So, it's But I was a little leery. I thought for sure, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a blowout. And again, it's the Vikings. You just never know. But
why they play.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Kelvin, buddy. Hey, man, it's been an honor visiting with you. I know we'll probably hit you up some more. We'll stay in touch. There's always more podcasts. We can always, touch up and see how things are going in the future. So I definitely want to thank you again for taking time out the second time to do this extra long podcast, which has been awesome. And I'm pretty sure we could talk some more. But it was a pleasure.
I also want to say thank you to not only you, but your sales staff, your staff entirety, your company. You guys are a dream to deal with. It's awesome. So
yeah, we appreciate that, man. And we don't take it lightly. It's something that we work very, very hard on. And we try to take a lot of pride in how we handle our business. And absolutely, guys, this was an honor. It was an absolute blast. We got to talk about a little bit of everything. So that was great. And we'd love to connect and build off of this. If you guys have obviously any questions or anything that you need to bounce off me, you know where I'm at. And I expect Rob to be making some phone calls when we're lifting some more trucks. So
I'll do as much as I can, man.
Yeah, and I think we should get together, and even if we fly out, and even if it's snow on the ground, I don't care. Just fly out, check out your place, hang out for a weekend. I think it would be a blast. I think it'd be a lot of fun just to sit around and shoot the crap and look at some of your stuff and tour your place and stuff like that. So be looking forward. We can line something up and do something like that.
Sure thing, gentlemen. Well, hey, appreciate the time with you guys, and can't wait to get back on this thing again and see where it can go.
Cool. Thanks, sounds Kelvin. Good, appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, guys. You too.
You bet.
Bye.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. So again, check us out on our Facebook, our YouTube. If you have any comments, go ahead, drop them in or let us know on the podcast. If you have any questions or any questions on what we should talk about, please drop in the comment box. Like to hear from you. So until then, don't forget, we'll see you in the next podcast.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Unriveted Radio. Also available on demand with the SuperTalk 1270 mobile app. Download in the App Store or Google Play today. Unriveted Radio, presented by Dakota Customs, a full-service custom garage on the Strip in Mandan.